It is Saturday, August 28, 2010, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, geek news, and the second half, your questions and comments about technology.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxel. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Geek Speak is a Creative Commons endeavor. You can go ahead and use our content if you share and share alike. The song today is Michael Newman of Pet Star Music. Thank you, Michael, for your song. And we take submissions for theme songs and for imagery for the website. We'd love to share your content with the world. Just send us email at geekspeak.org. I'm Lyle Troxel. In the air with me are Miles Elam. He's a software engineer and political junkie. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning.
We also have Lindsay Lonnie, system analyst.
Good morning.
You need a second title, system analyst and rock star skier. I don't know.
Extraordinaire. Can I have extraordinaire in my name?
I'm typing in right now.
Okay.
And we have Al Luckow, new media architect.
Hi, everybody.
Extraordinaire. Great. Let's go ahead and start with you, Lindsay. What's going on with tracking your every move?
Okay, so the GPS tracking. Basically, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, which covers California and eight other western states, recently decided that government agents can put a GPS device on the bottom of your car and keep track of you everywhere you go without having to get a warrant. And they say that this doesn't violate your Fourth Amendment rights because you don't have any reasonable expectation, quote-unquote, of privacy in your own driveway and no reasonable expectation that the government isn't tracking your movements. So it was a court case that began in 2007 when the DEA was monitoring an Oregon resident suspected of growing marijuana. Mm-hmm. He challenged the legality of the DA's actions in court, but it was ruled to be legal. And the judges said that the driveway was not private. It was open to strangers like delivery people and neighborhood children who could wander across it uninvited.
But the car itself, isn't that pet trespass?
Apparently not if it's in your driveway.
They were able to put some kind of attached device. Miles, you know about the story too. This is a California thing?
It's a Ninth Circuit thing, so it's the eight western states.
Mm-hmm. So we were just talking about this on the GeekSpeak email thread about the idea, this general idea that you have privacy, you have reasonable rights. And so the reason why someone can't like search inside your house is because that would be, you'd need a search warrant because it's not in the public space. So this idea of it being in the driveway, therefore you can do it. But the idea of adding something to a car, I mean, he theoretically was carrying around some of their equipment, right?
Theoretically.
Isn't that illegal? I mean,
here's a question. Do the police have the right to surveil you without getting a warrant? That's really the question.
Well, I wonder.
So can they follow you in a car and like follow you and where your activities are? So where is the difference there between that and GPS?
Well, one thing, they're adding something to your vehicle. They're attaching something. They're invading your, you know, they're potentially damaging your vehicle.
But do we have the right to? Do we have the right to block that transmission? So do we have the right to put something in our car that will mess up the GPS tracking device?
Probably.
I found a few items when I looked at the story that linked to a couple things you can plug into your lighter that will effectively mess up. You know, it's a jammer, GPS jammer, but they're illegal.
They are.
Yeah.
So the thing with the GPS is it's a small device with a battery and antennas on it. And that then receives the GPS signals from multiple satellites. The triangulation of that pinpoints the location, latitude and longitude, and altitude, if you get no satellites involved, of where things are. So that's how that works. And then on top of that, they had to have a transmitter that sent something up. It was probably a cell phone device that then was sending the data of the GPS coordinates to some server. So that's then a transmitting device. Both of those things you could potentially block. I think it's illegal to interfere with the GPS because actually all the GPS radios that we have are receive only. And I think that the spectrum is pretty well set up so that you're not supposed to jam them.
Right.
So that's why it's illegal.
It's not specific probably to GPS. It's right. The FCC transmission guidelines or whatever. And these devices, you know, they do care. In the same places that you see the GPS jammers, you see the cell phone jammers.
Okay. Right, but the police equipment must have a retransmitter. Or they'd have to retrieve the device after the fact.
I would think so, too.
So the question is, can you jam those transmitters?
Well, that transmitter, if I were to build one, which actually a student of mine is interested in building one of these, you'd use a cell phone, and you just have a cell phone service. So the phone would make a call every once in a while. Now, whether they tapped into the electricity of the car would be...
Yeah.
I would think that wouldn't be okay.
No, there'd be no point to it, considering the...
I know, big enough battery pack, no big deal. The inside of a bumper can hold a lot of stuff. But it still seems to me it's not reasonable. I mean... I don't think it's a place where that's a reasonable thing to think that, oh, the government's going to stick a device on my vehicle that will track me. I don't think that's reasonable. I mean, you know, the government's going to look into my backyard with a helicopter. Yeah, that's reasonable. I accept that.
Right. But does the Fourth Amendment apply? I mean, we're talking as non-lawyers, so this is all fun. But it's not a search.
True.
And it's not a seizure.
True.
So,
well, but what about tapping phone? It's the same type of thing, right? That's not legal without a warrant. Because you expect some privacy.
There are actual laws on the book specifically stating that you can't tap phones without a warrant. So mm-hmm. that's not something that's from the Constitution.
Here's the one that Alex and I were talking about on the email thread, that now police cars are pretty commonly taking pictures of every single car that they drive by. So these police vehicles in San Jose, for example, take a picture every time they see a vehicle. And then they index the location of that picture and all of the detected license plates they see. So they have this giant database of where all the cars are in San Jose all the time and just the general patterns of them. And then if they want to look for a stolen car, they can find out where it is because they've seen it. That is almost reasonable. I remember we had the police officer on the show talking about this. We were like, this doesn't sound okay. But if you think about it, it's just like a police officer going writing down certain numbers.
Right, but that's the thing, though. If you're taking photos, I had issue with that. I remember that show where there's a presumption of guilt. You're watching everyone saying, which one is doing something wrong? Like, there's this... presumably, if someone's putting a GPS device on your car, there's a...
But remember, we talked about this like a neighborhood police officer. If he knew every car in the neighborhood and then a car that he didn't recognize came in and he was more vigilant of that vehicle and looking at it, that makes sense, right? So we accept it at the level of an individual, but once it gets into a mass system, it goes, ugh. Now, when that story first happened, I was like, that doesn't really sound reasonable. Now, I kind of accept it as reasonable. Like, I'd accept that, your license plate's visible, so that's okay. But this, is, I think, is different.
So I have a question, though. It's legal without a warrant for them to put this on for police to put this onto your car. Is it legal for a citizen to put one of these devices on a police car?
Let's find out. Come on.
If police can do it without a warrant, then anyone can do it.
No, you're making that statement as you believe that should be true.
I believe that.
But is that actually the case, or would you be guilty of tampering?
I would assume that touching a police officer's car, you know, tampering with it's a problem.
Well, all the police cars have GPS units built within them, and as sort of an ironic aside, this startup that I was in, sort of around the turn of the
Wheels
century,
of Zeus.
Wheels of Zeus, it was a GPS startup, mm-hmm. and the instigator of this whole thing was this guy named Alex Fielding, and his idea was to build some kind of product that could tell where all the cops were,
right?
You know, because he says they all have these GPS transmitters and stuff. And so,
and that's the thing is right now what the police cars are doing with pictures everywhere and taking a database, it wouldn't be that hard for another company like Google, who likes the street views, to mm-hmm. put cameras on people's cars and build a public database which other people could use and start, you know, private investigators would love it because they'd know if, you know, Joe Schmo went and visited a hotel at noon someday.
Right. Mm-hmm. And just to move it away from the us versus them, police versus system mentality, would it also be legal for me to go to some person and go like, oh, hey, that's a cute girl. Why don't I put a GPS tracking device on her car? I can see where she goes. Like, is that legal?
Yeah, that does.
Well, that's the thing. If you don't have a warrant, then anyone can do it, right? Isn't that kind of the border? I don't know. The thing about reasonability.
That's actually not the border. I mean, there are things that police do that they are empowered with that don't require a warrant, but they can do that citizens can't. That's not really fair enough.
Don't they need a warrant to search your car?
To search it, yes.
But to put something on the outside, they don't. So just the difference between the inside and the outside. They couldn't put something inside your car.
They're not looking in your car. They're looking to see where the car goes.
Yeah. But
so basically, if you think you might be tracked because you're selling pot, I'm talking to you, Miles. check your bumper every time.
So there's another caveat to this, just an interesting aside. The chief judge who dissented with this whole thing, he's a conservative that was appointed by Reagan, and he accused the other judges of cultural elitism because of this, because he says that the homes of the rich are gated and considered, so the driveway would be considered private property, whereas if you don't have a gated yard, it's not considered
that
private
in
your driveway.
That is an excellent point.
What if you put a do not trespass sign right at the border of your property?
Well,
isn't that theoretically trespassing
or on your bumper?
Or on the bumper of your car.
That's the interesting thing, though, is that if you're parked on the street,
What if you're in a neighborhood that only has street parking?
Yeah. But anyway, just an interesting aside. And he also referred to Orwell's 1984 in his written dissent, which I thought was great.
Yay, Reagan guy.
Yeah.
Wait a second.
Alex Kuczynski.
All right. Thank you so much. Let's talk about something GPS that's not so creepy. It's more cool.
Yeah, let's get down to something that's really, really important and useful with GPS, which is why, of course, you looked at me when you said that.
That's right.
Well, this guy, his name is Nick Newcomen, drove 12,238 miles across 30 states to scrawl a GPS message using Google Earth.
So what's the so, what is
so he
GPS
took he
message?
Took 30 days, uh-huh. And he figured out the route that he wanted to drive all across, I mean, the entire United States, and then he set points when he was at different areas so that these points would be next to each other on Google Earth when he uploaded it, so you could see
it's one of those things where you can put a GPS coordinate system drawn out on Google Earth. So you can kind of track where you've walked.
You can sync it, and then it'll show...
show where it is.
It'll show the thing.
What did he write that was took him... How long did it take him?
Why do you ask?
Is it appropriate for the air?
No, he did write something. It says...
Dun, dun, dun.
Read Ayn Rand.
Ayn Rand, yeah.
Ayn Rand.
Patron saint of all 17-year-old white boys who haven't studied any real philosophy yet.
He said the main reason he did it was because he's a fan. He says, in my opinion, if more people would read her books and take her ideas seriously, the country would be a better place.
Miles, I haven't read her. Give me the brief.
Well, it's you know...
Let me put it this way, because I am going to be biased in this, and
it's going to show...
Yeah, Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead.
Fountainhead, yeah.
Oh, right. Okay, I know her. She is.
Sure. It's...
I've read The Fountainhead.
At the same time, Greenspan, the former Fed chairman, who was a devout follower of Ayn Rand for a long time and followed her philosophies, has said that those philosophies, in a nutshell, he was basically saying, I was wrong as a... overall, like, my world outlook was wrong, and that was in regard to the financial crisis we were in now, so... Ayn Rand's philosophies are what got us to the financial crisis, according to Alan Greenspan.
So someone else needs to go in the lower part of the states and write and think critically.
I wonder if you could append this. He took up the entire United States. He went all the way from upper Washington down to Virginia.
I don't know. It looks like there's some room in Oregon and lower Idaho to be able to say something other than...
Or you could get a boat and do the Gulf.
The E doesn't look very good.
All right, who's going to Mexico next? We got to continue this message. Okay. All right, thank you very much for that. Miles, hi.
Hi.
So I kind of, you guys both had the same story, and I'm sorry I threw it over.
No,
so
that's fine.
You go ahead and talk to us about BlackBerry.
I will talk about BlackBerry. BlackBerry, done by Research in Motion, the company, everybody has their CrackBerry. they are trying to get into the market in India, or they have been in the market in India. And they've been in a battle for quite some time where Indian officials or the Indian government wants them to stop encrypting their email messages with such a high level of security. They want to lower the security level so that they could actually look into the devices or take the security off altogether.
Mm-hmm.
BlackBerry has resisted this because it's one of the reasons why people choose BlackBerry is the fact that the messages on the device are encrypted so you can lock them down if they get lost or stolen. There's a lot of corporate espionage that... people are really, is a major concern.
I remember when Apple was releasing the second version of their iPhone OS, they had all this stuff that was about government, about businesses being able to lock down the phone remotely, all this stuff that clearly was the reason why companies were saying no to the iPhone early stage and yes to BlackBerry because they had all the security around it.
Right. So now BlackBerry is in this quandary in India where they can either stick by their guns and go, no, the privacy is important. This is one of our major sellers. This is how we get people onto the platform. Versus if they don't comply, India is going to kick them out of the Indian market, which means that they're going to ban them from
the Can't they just make a version for India?
I'm sure they could, but at the same time, I know my company converses with India all the time. So once you have one piece of a conversation unencrypted, it's all unencrypted.
Well, isn't it? How is it? What are the rules in the U.S.? I mean, I think that, you know, Research in Motion already has deals with, like, the U.S. about encryption and that sort of thing. Like,
why is India different?
Yeah, I mean, because they're requesting more security than the U.S. requests.
Yes. Or rather, the U.S. is not specifically stating that Research in Motion has to make them lower encryption level.
It's a Canadian company, right? Research in Motion? I think they're Canadian.
So explain again. India specifically is saying your encryption's not good enough, or we want to be transparent?
It's too good. We want to be able to look into the messages and do investigations for criminal activity.
We want a backdoor kind of thing.
Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
Didn't Dubai say that too?
There are a lot of countries that have done that have done so. India, I believe, is the first big democracy to do so.
It's an interesting stance. I mean, we had some legislation in the pipes that would do the same kind of thing for encryption in the U.S., and that was successfully beat down by Electronic Freedom Foundation and others. The idea that if you want to use really strong encryption, you need to have some kind of backdoor so a federal government agency could say, here's a warrant, we want to look at the encryption. And the problem is, mathematically, that's really dangerous to do. And that's my understanding, at least. Of course, we don't have Alex here when we're talking about this kind of stuff. We probably should. Okay, interesting story. I mean, thank you very much for letting us know about the battle in India of BlackBerries. I'm assuming Research in Motion is going to yield, because that's a giant market.
That's open for debate, but yeah, a lot of folks watching the story are expecting Research in Motion to cave rather than the Indian government.
Yeah.
Indian government doesn't need BlackBerry, but BlackBerry would really be hurting if it lost all of that
market.
A lot of people. All right, on the lighter side, Lindsay, what's about some computer visualization stuff?
So nmap.org, nonprofit, they did a large scale scan, or there was a large scale scan of the top million websites performed in early 2010 using their security scanner and its scripting engine. They retrieved each site's icon first, from HTML, and then falling back to the favicon if they couldn't get the HTML link. Mm-hmm. And 288,945 images were collected and used to create a visualization where all icons are represented based on the area of each icon is proportional to the sum of the reach of the sites using the icon.
So if you take all the sites, so like Google or Yahoo or something's biggest.
Google's biggest.
Cool.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're actually using this image as today's show page image. And, of course, all the stuff we talk about on GeekSpeak, you can get to at geekspeak.org. The favicon, what is the favicon?
The favicon's a little icon in the tab toolbar at the top that shows
where you write URLs in, the location
right,
bar.
Right, exactly.
That little thing that shows up for some sites.
It's a little graphic, yeah.
So,
but everybody doesn't have one.
Those are pretty small pixels. It was like, 16 by 16 pixels originally, I think? I've built them before, yeah.
So a lot of, like Google, when you go to look at the image, the Google is pixelated because it's enlarged.
I'm looking right now, it's totally pixelated. It's true.
So yeah.
Right, you can see the pixels.
Exactly.
I like that they didn't blur it. They just showed the 16 by 16 pixels.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interactive.
It's interesting. Apple's is still pretty because it's small enough. YouTube looks bad. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And you can navigate around. You can zoom in on it and pan around. And they have a poster you can get and stuff like that.
I wait for the day when sooner or later that a lot of these graphics become vector on the web,
Yes.
It would be really nice,
Al, if I can say one thing about you, it's like vector all the way.
Yeah.
You're always talking about projects. Al, of course, is a designer. What do we say? A new media architect, but it means he's a web designer and an application UI designer. He's a designer. And every time he shows me the thing, he's like, yeah, and I did that in vector. Because, of course, when you do it in vector, you can rescale to any size. And that's really important when you're dealing with multiple output formats. Yeah. And everyone is, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that format, it's actually, originally it was a GIF, and now you can do a PNG, a GIF, I think, or a JPEG as well.
Originally an ICO format, actually.
Yeah,
right. And then you had Firefox. Then you had Firefox come out and say any image format
and
Firefox supports.
It really started from Microsoft. Microsoft started having Internet Explorer look for a favicon.ico in your root directory. If you had it, it showed it up. And then finally, the HTML spec kind of bumped up the spec, and you can do a meta tag for it and specify any image location. But still, if you don't have that favicon.ico on there, some old browsers won't show the picture. So I always make one in PNG and then translate it over to that format so that old browsers can work. Maybe I should stop doing that because old browsers stink.
There was some virus associated with favicons
there,
a while ago.
There we discovered a few weeks ago, didn't we? So much knowledge. 10 years is a long time. Yeah. Speaking of which, next week we are doing a little celebration downtown at an ice cream parlor. A friend of mine just opened the Penny Ice Creamery downtown Santa Cruz. And after the show next week on After Geek Speak, it's at 913 Cedar Street. You can find this information out up at geekspeak.org. We're going to go and give away t-shirts. And if I convince him, I'm sure I will, to be able to give away some ice cream. And you can meet all the geeks. I think all of us are going to be in town. All the active geeks are going to be in town. So we'll be down at the creamery after Geek Speak next week, giving away some t-shirts, some ice cream, handshakes, pictures, the works, for about a half an hour. So you got to really be in there at the right time. And I'll mention again next week, but try to be downtown next week, listen to Geek Speak. And I'm sure that they will be open and playing the show, but I'm not totally sure of that. Anyway, that's next week on Geek Speak. After the show, meet the geeks. And you can learn more about this up at geekspeak.org, which you should be visiting every day. So eventually, we get up onto this in-map image, which we're not on right now. All right. Al, have you checked some of the bigger sites you've done work for? You should see if one of your icons is actually on there.
I went in there, and there's only a gazillion icons in there. I mean...
yeah, we can do a search.
That's just the enormous thing.
You can do a search.
Really? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you go up to the actual link, which isn't up right now. So
that'd be interesting.
We'll do it soon. All right, next person up would be Mr. Miles Elam. Go ahead and pick your best.
Yeah, I was switching things around there.
Yeah,
I thought this was interesting. There's a company that is willing to press your ashes into a vinyl record when you die. That way, you can, if you record that record, you can have some audio, like your voice on it, or some whatever items you wanted to record, any audio you wanted.
Does it actually take the ashes carbon and turn it into vinyl?
Or is it just kind of it presses it into the vinyl substrate, yeah. Okay. I don't know that...
Is it pretty?
Can it be any kind of music?
Well, yeah, it's audio.
Just checking.
It's a vinyl record, so...
It doesn't have to be like funeral music or anything?
No, you're still going to be covered by copyright and stuff like that, but...
They won't do copyright material.
So you can play your deceased uncle's record.
Copyright extends past the death of the original artist.
It'd be cool, though, if the person that died was a singer, and then they sang, and then they made a record out of their own ashes.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
That'd be weird. They could probably come back to life.
The thing that disturbs me about this is that in my home, the vinyl is the thing the kids play with, because we have a lot of vinyl, and so we have them do records all the time, and they just get thrashed. It's the idea of like Uncle Lou being in the vinyl collection, and the kids are like, "No!"
Some DJ scratching you.
Can you make CDs?
A friend and researcher.
If you were very reflective ashes, sure. Yeah.
Get some Elmer's glue, a CD, and some ash. A friend of mine's actually trying to cut a record into plastic with a laser cutter at work, and he's doing an algorithm that writes it around. If he gets it working, I'll bring it in and play it in here, because, of course, there's two turntables next to me right now.
Excellent.
All right, Al, I skipped you.
Oh.
What's up with vending machine technology?
In Japan, in Shinagawa Station.
I should have guessed it was going to be in Japan.
It's always in Japan. Mm-hmm. This is kind of neat, though, because I've been doing a lot of touchscreen stuff lately, and this kind of is pretty cool. It's a vending machine that has all sorts of weird drinks in it, and it's the entire front of the vending machine is a giant LCD monitor, touchscreen monitor. So when you walk up to it, you just have like all these really colorful looking bottles of weird stuff that they drink over there. Mm-hmm. Like they have all these weird...
All that stuff with the weird solid things in it that you chew.
Yeah, there's just all these weird drinks, And even water, you can just
it was weird.
Strange, like 10 different kinds of water. And so you can just touch them, and that's how you manipulate it. And then when you touch it, it kind of enlarges, and then it's like a little video animation, almost like an ad for the thing, mm-hmm. the cork pops off and fizzes and says, "Oh, you will love this drink," and that's cool. But then in addition to that, there's the little embedded cameras that apparently can recognize your gender and age. And so the machine will recommend a suitable beverage for whatever stereotype you happen to be.
Especially if you've got GPS on your car.
Yeah, I mean, so now you walk up to this thing and it says, oh, that's a little kid. He'd probably like this. Or that's an adult. Give him, you know, like hard liquor. You know, yeah. I mean, I don't know what kind of things they sell in the vending machines over there, but I think you can buy stuff like
buy
that.
Anything. So the idea is that it would then tailor its user interface to be more suitable for you.
Yeah, and then it also has a thing, and this is what they say, that it can remember you and store your preferences.
Last choice.
Yeah, so...
And of course, if they have lots of these all over the world and they're all synced together...
Well, they're planning to put 500 more of these. It's called WiMAX, WiMAX-equipped units all around Tokyo. And this company, JR East, that is distributing these things... promoting all it's creating a lot of sales. I mean, you put one of these vending machines there, people want to touch it and buy stuff and have these animated doohickeys pop up.
All right, so we've got smart vending machines that are going to recognize you, know what your choices are, allow you to use your fingertips just touching to navigate a whole bunch of things.
You don't actually see the product. Like nowadays you can see the product and it falls.
As that emerges, that kind of technology emerges in our society, of course it's reasonable that cameras at stop signs are going to be taking pictures of everybody there, and so that they can figure out where people go, and recognize them. Okay, I'm looking at the picture now. Ooh, it's really cool. It's wide.
It's very big.
It's huge.
It's like the size of a vending machine.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of a neat thing. It probably contributes to a lot of light pollution, if you ask me. But
is that a serious concern, light pollution?
Well, old vending machine in front of a coffee shop, and I don't know. It just seems like it's bright. Maybe it turns on when you get close to it. I don't know. They don't show it all out, so.
You are listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. This is Geek Speak. All the stuff we talk about on Geek Speak with Al, Lindsay, Miles, even Ben and Alex sometimes when they're here, and myself, Lyle Troxell. All the stuff we talk about is up at geekspeak.org for your viewing and investigating pleasure. The phone number is to call in today with questions and comments about technology are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, the phone numbers, I'll give it just one more second. Do we have a Geek Bit today? Anybody? News story? It's short?
Geek Bit.
Yeah, scientists create dry water. Moving on.
I want to hear about that one.
Go ahead and do it as Geek Bit.
No.
let me respond correctly. What?
Scientists have created water, but each particle of water has a sandy silica coating. So it's 95% wet water, but it's really dry. It has some great applications with regard to soaking up carbon dioxide. It does it better than – or absorbs carbon dioxide better than wet water does.
This dry water, I'm assuming it's liquid?
No. It's a powder.
Do you have to add water to get it to become water?
Maybe.
that's a Geek Bit for you.
Miles, you have to explain more than that. I'm sorry. So they've taken water, they've added sand, it's dry, and now they're calling it dry water.
But they're not adding sand. It's not a mud.
Okay.
It actually is a water droplet that is encased in a silica shell.
Why would that help?
But that silica, why would it help in absorbing carbon dioxide?
Why would it help? Why would you call it water? Why wouldn't you call it silicate pellets?
Because it's 95% water. That silica is so such a thin sheen.
Yeah, but if I give you a brick of gold and I wrap it in – I mean, brick of lead and I wrap it in gold and I say, hey, it's a gold brick. Or no, it's not. It's gold and lead. I mean,
hold on. If I gave you a gold brick but it was wrapped in wrapping paper, you tell me that it wasn't a gold brick?
Who's giving us gold bricks? Because I want one too.
Ooh, touche. What kind of wrapping paper? This is not what I asked for. No, but I mean,
I can't believe you gave me wrapping paper.
Put it this way: when you talk about water, you like the purposes of it, like being wet, it being able to be like the universal dissolver that water is, right?
All these universal solvent.
Solvent.
Yes.
Thank you. All these qualities of it, we think of water. When you put it in pellet form, it's not exactly water.
It's not the same form, yeah, but we like carbon in many different forms. Like diamond is one form of carbon, and graphite is another form of carbon.
And you're thirsty, and you want to drink. And I go, here, have some dry stuff. And you go, thanks. And then you drink it, and your body then expels it because you can't use it, and you're still thirsty. I don't. It's not water. It doesn't do anything. What does it do?
You can make sandcastles out of it.
And next week, maybe we'll learn more about that. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. This is Geek Speak. We're taking calls with questions and comments about technology. 476-2800. Again, 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. You know, we do say questions or comments or corrections. Let's remember, you can correct us. God knows we need it. All right, what do we got for today? Hey, cool. Line six. Hey, Zach. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hello, Zach. You're on air.
Lyle, how are you?
Quite well. So you just opened an ice cream shop, huh?
That's true.
And so next week you're cool with us swamping and giving away t-shirts, and you're giving away some ice cream to the listeners?
Yeah, we'd love to see you.
Great. Great. You said that you had a lot of trouble with point of sale and trying to get Microsoft to talk to your cash register and stuff. You want to go through that real quick as a geeky thing?
Sure. We were lucky enough to have gifted to us some point-of-sale equipment from my business partner's mother's previous business. Mm-hmm. And you'd think this stuff's been used before. You should be able to plug it in and, you know, get it to work. But it was just a wild ride trying to get software to talk to hardware that uses interfaces that were designed a long time ago but are still somehow in use. You know, things that look like telephone jacks and modem cables and whatnot. And then, you know, I start reading about solenoids and dip switches and getting cash drawers to fire off. And
right. So, basic, I know your pain only from the sense of a customer and a geek. Every time I go to a shop that's got, like, old equipment, I look at the back of their cash register. Miles, you do this too?
I do. Yeah. I do. It's always like an old dusty Dell or something. It's like all this
an old
junk
machine
down there.
And there's like a weird large, webs. Like not an RJ45 or an RJ11. It's something else. Yeah. It's plugged in.
It's something
some kind
else.
Of dongle with a bad screw. And you're like, man, if something sneezes here, this business is screwed.
I know.
I mean, it just looks like a pain waiting to happen.
Yep.
So you've gone through that.
I have.
And that's why you're giving away ice cream for free? No, I'm just kidding. You got it work, I'm assuming?
Well, almost. It's working enough. We've got the thermal printer printing receipts. We've got the cash drawer to open some of the time, and some of the time the ice cream is free.
Excellent. Could be your trademark.
Zach, last time I talked to you, you were going and doing a whole bunch of video editing and tech kind of stuff in San Francisco, right? What happened? Where did you come back and do ice cream?
That's true. Well, I actually I finished an MBA program, and I really just decided that I wanted to go into business for myself. Mm-hmm. But I had a lot of fun working for an internet startup in San Francisco, and I learned probably way more about the startup world than I really thought I was going to, and maybe even needed to. But it was a wild ride as well, and it definitely prepared me for any kind of business venture.
Well, if you're interested in talking geek with a really amazing Final Cut editor and teacher, you can go down to the Penny Ice Creamery in Santa Cruz. You're at 913 Cedar Street. And next week, if you do it right after Geek Speak, we'll be giving away t-shirts. Zach will be giving away some ice cream, and you can meet all the geeks. Zach, thanks for opening up your shop to us next week. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Lyle. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, let's go ahead and take. So that would be, I don't know, that's not really a comment or a question.
Well, that, you know, it's you
perfect,
did
though.
Give the promotion of the t-shirts. And by the way, if you are of a larger size, you will be more welcome in this case because most of our t-shirts are of the larger
variety. I think we have
variety.
One medium left, and I was listening to last week's episode of Geek Speak and found out that, yeah, Lindsay doesn't have one still.
Oh, okay.
So
well,
the medium's going away today, but we have larges, extra larges, and extra larges.
Which basically fit pretty much. Larges fit
you know,
most everybody.
Or bring a friend and an
or
extra large.
Or if you're smaller, it becomes a nightshirt.
Yes, mm-hmm. Right.
No,
yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes, I
Geek
want people
t-shirts.
To think about us when they're in bed.
I think we should.
I want them to dream geekily.
I think it's the time to make a t-shirt for Miles so that people think about Miles in bed.
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
Well, I don't want people wearing the Geeksby t-shirt in bed. I want it out in the street. Where does a nightshirt but go out to get your newspaper? There,
yeah,
is that good?
There you go.
You can go to breakfast in your jammies.
There you go. Breakfast and jammies. Breakfast and Geeksby
Hold
t-shirt.
Slumber parties and wear your Geeksby
Totally supporting
shirt.
That.
Yeah,
it's
go.
Awesome. Jim and Big Sir, welcome to Geekspeak.
Good morning.
I
have a question for you about smartphones. I've got an old 650, what's the name of the company? You know, anyway, they've been bought out recently. Palm. But what I really want is something very an EVO, like a Sprint EVO, with a carrier that'll let me make do international calling, but has a true walkie-talkie with it. Now, there are some apps that you can put on your your smartphone that says it's a walkie-talkie. My question to you guys is it a true walkie-talkie in which the device sends, under its own power, the signal to another receiving device without the use of a network?
Almost never, or for all intents and purposes, no.
Suspicions confirmed.
Somebody made a phone like that once. But they're old.
I think Motorola has a model that is a true walkie-talkie, but I don't want a Motorola. Mm-hmm. I want an EVO.
Yeah, there are models that are push to talk, but they're still not. They're not.
It's Nextel is the one we're thinking about.
Yeah, Nextel. That's
Nextel.
The one I'm thinking
about. Okay.
Yeah.
The push to talk is not necessarily a walkie-talkie model. It's just
right. Yeah, and yeah, your suspicions are correct that the app is not going to operate differently. It's not like they've got a second antenna in there.
It's a pseudo walkie-talkie.
The app is really not. I mean, the way that I think the Nextel has worked is they actually had another. Like another 800 megahertz spectrum radio in there, and they're actually communicating directly, not the cell phone use.
Yeah, we used to have Nextels at work, and we just punch a button and talk to people right off the bat.
Yeah, they're really cool.
Yeah.
And are you trying to do this because sometimes you don't have cell phone coverage?
Well, yeah, when you're out and about with your partner, whatever, and you're in and we're often I go around the world and do photography, landscape photography, with my wife and. And we're in areas that are way off the map, and but we're operating independently. It'd be very nice to be able to reach her, without in an area that has no network.
Yeah. In defense of cell phone manufacturers, though, having a transmitter that can act over a usable range, it means you're going to be reducing that battery life and that very small battery in a cell phone very quickly.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it's possible that they could use the cell phone signals and antennas to do it, but then they've added a level of complication which probably isn't supported by their license of that spectrum.
So
I'm thinking no, but you know what? We've just talked to a lot of geeks in the Central California area, and maybe somebody will call us and tell us, oh, yes, it does work. Lindsay, that's me.
There's actually a manufacturer that makes a phone like that, but you can't get it through the provider. So you could buy the phone and possibly hook it up with your provider service.
Do you know the name of the manufacturer or the name of the phone?
Babakin. And so I have no idea about quality. I'm not, I've never tried it, but they make a Windows mobile phone.
How do you spell that?
Babiken.
Very interesting. Babakin.
We will put the Babakin International website linked from our website, geekspeak.org.
Great.
Thank you for the call.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
And because I am such a tightwad, I keep thinking, why not just buy a walkie-talkie and have that with your cell phone? Yeah, it's two things to carry, but that would be a lot cheaper, I think.
Yeah, it would be cheaper.
I'm also curious, the Babakin, it's Windows Mobile. Do you know if it's a GSM device or if it's a CDMA or a PCS?
I'm not sure. I'll have to look at the website.
I'm looking at it right now. I can't see it. But
yeah,
they don't
list it right on the cover. So I'm thinking maybe it's not global.
Yeah. We're talking about the different carriers. Like, the reason why you get some phones for some carrier and some phones for the other is that, like, Sprint and AT&T use different carrier signals. So the phones actually don't work on each other's carriers.
Yeah, and if you get something that's not GSM, it means you can't take it out of the U.S. because just about everywhere, except I think parts of Japan, they use GSM. Hmm. And then the U.S. has the other carriers like Verizon and Sprint that use a technology that is not used just about anywhere else in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that trade-off. But if you have no passport and you never go across a border, it doesn't really matter.
GSM 850, 900, 1800, and 1900. So it's GSM.
Okay.
Interesting. Looks like a cool phone. They should send us one. We can review it. All right. Thank you so much for the call again, Jim, from Big Sur. And now we're going to go to John in Monterey. Welcome to GeekSpeak. Hello, John. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. How are you all doing today?
Quite well.
I've got maybe a easier question for you than the last two in our streaming questions.
All right.
I'm making the transition to Mac slowly. And just over time, even though I wasn't able to use Palm devices very well, the Palm address book became my default address book. And with the help of Apple Expert, I got the addresses over to my address book, but what didn't come along was what Apple calls the groups.
The groups? Oh, mm-hmm. Right. The group, the address
like
book groups.
Business, personal.
Didn't transfer over when you did the sync?
Yeah. Somehow Palm has tags on the addresses that put them in certain groups. So you can bring up all of the addresses. You can bring up individual groups.
And address book also has the groups feature. You know, I found this problem recently when I did my syncing of my address book in OS X to Google address book. The groups got lost. The groups got transferred, but nobody's actually in the groups. Really irritating. I don't think there's an easy way to fix that. I think you might want to open up the application and kind of manually do it. You could get someone to write a script for you to do this because Apple address book and Palm, I think, are both viewable in Apple script. But it'd be a pretty complicated little thing to do. You'd basically want to make like a tab delimited file or some kind of data file that had all your address books and all the groups, and then you'd walk through that with an Apple script, slowly moving people in the address book that match into the groups. And you know, someone like me that's not really proficient in Apple script could probably do that in about 4 hours of coding. Miles, that sounds like a good way to go.
It
just sounds kind of painful, huh?
It sounds like there's going to be pain.
Yes,
there will be blood.
Yeah, It's not something they're going to support off the bat if it didn't work. There might be someone that wrote Apple script before. Go ahead and do Apple script search address book groups Palm and see if you get one.
Actually, a quick question. How many contacts are you talking about? What's your
good question
range there?
400. And I started slugging it out manually and putting them in groups. But then you can't tell if it's in a group or not. If you didn't keep track of every single one that you put in, I can't find any tag on there that I can access, you know, just as a regular user. When I look at an address.
On the Palm side?
On the Apple side.
So on the Apple side, the groups on the left, as you click on the group, it shows up there, right?
Right, but you can't see which ones are not in that group. There's no...
Exactly.
You can do smart groups. You quite easily could do a smart group that does that. If you add smart groups... So this is what I've done before in this kind of scenario. You can make a smart group that has a rule that says if this person has this in their text of their message or something, put them in this group.
Oh, okay. So okay. One of the lines that you can put in... One of the details about the address, I'll just put in there which group it's in.
Well, what you'd want to do is inside the notes of the address entry, you'd want to put like, you know, GeekSpeak if you want to have the GeekSpeak group, right? So you'd write GeekSpeak in the text body, the notes field of the address book. Then you make a smart group on the left-hand side, it's down at the bottom, I think, and you say if the person has GeekSpeak in their notes field, put them in this group. And then once you've done that, you'll have all those people. Then you can grab that whole group's contents and move it into a normal group instead of the smart group, which will change as you add things. So that's one way to do it.
I understand. That makes sense.
Good. Yeah. Good luck.
Pretty cool.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye. I think I helped him. That was the first. 10 years, that's first.
Now I'm actually curious. Is there any way to – I could probably play with it on my own box.
You
but,
could.
Is there any way to say – show me people who are not in this group?
There's definitely nots. I don't know about not in a group. Yeah, I think there
is. So if he only has like five groups, he could just say like not in this one, not in this one, not in this one, not in this one,
yeah.
Not in this one.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And
that
everyone that's left over is the one you still
I
need to
bet you that would
manage.
Work. I hope that John's still listening. John, if you turn your radio off, it's back up. Miles is suggesting make a smart group that has the rules not in the group. Just look through the smart groups. You'll figure it out. I think you sound like a pretty smart guy. All right, we are taking calls with questions and comments of technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Or 1-800-655-5877. Lindsay, what's going on with Cleveland residents?
So in Cleveland, Ohio, the city is installing RF chips and barcodes on recycling bins. They allow city workers to monitor how often residents roll the carts out to the curb for collection. And if a chip shows that a recyclable cart hasn't been brought to the curb in weeks, a trash supervisor will sort through the actual trash for recyclables. And then if the trash cart contains more than 10% recyclable material, they fine them $100.
Okay, so if the recycling bin doesn't come out and multiple times it's not used, then they'll search through the trash can and then fine them. That's
exactly.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So is there any technology involved here or just somebody like making a note of the bin?
It's totally automated. Until they have to search through the bins.
Right.
But there's RF barcodes, and so they use RF technology, radio frequency, to read the barcodes of the bins that are sitting out there, and so it'll make a note of when ones are absent.
So when the machine is actually dumping them, it keeps track of all the ones it's dumped, and then it knows from that what the list of non-seeing for a while is, and once it sees that one, it searches it. That's
I know a guy, this friend of mine, Nick, he lives in San Francisco, and he actually got a warning because the garbage man saw recyclable stuff in his garbage.
Mm-hmm.
And this is without any kind of chip or any guy's like, hey, you can't, you know, and he got a written, like, you'll get a ticket if you put, like, this big plastic jug in your garbage.
Yeah.
It needs to go
recycle. Amazing how much they can recycle in Santa Cruz.
This whole area is, like, the recycling capital of the world, you know?
Especially since they got rid of those partitions that were, okay, paper on this side.
Yeah. Oh, that was terrible.
And then you saw it dump into the truck and go in one place. You're like,
I know. That was silly.
All right. I don't even know how to promote this story, Al, because I don't know what it's about. But Seabreacher X, what is this?
Oh, this is a very cool device. It's not exactly a jetpack, but it's a boat that looks like a shark, and it's about the same size as a fairly good sized great white shark.
Sorry, and it's not a jetpack, but it's a boat that looks like a shark.
But it, but it's that to me
and
is
then
very.
I saw the picture. I went right. I see what you're talking
there
about.
There you go. And there's a video of this, and we'll have the link up on geekspeak.org. It's called the Seabreacher X. It's a very expensive boat, but the way that it works is it really looks like a shark. I mean, and you're inside a cockpit that is, you know, kind of where the eyes would be, sort of. And when the thing is in the water, you can go underwater with it. You know, not like real far, you go underwater, and then you flip a switch, and it shoots up out of the water into the air. So you're
like a jetpack.
Like a jetpack. And so like people be at the beach and they see this thing shooting out of the water.
It looks like a 30-foot shark.
It looks really, I mean, it is.
It looks like a very large
fins.
Dolphin doing the jump. Like it looks like a dolphin jump from the photo.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
It's got fins. It's got a shark thing on the top. It's got, you know, the dorsal fins. It's got, I mean, the thing looks like a shark. And when you see this thing, the video of this thing going around, you're like, that would be cool.
That would be
a really awesome thing to have if you were, you know, wealthy and you could afford this sort of thing.
Thank you very much for the non-jetpack boat shark.
Hey,
appreciate that.
You know what? You got to see this thing.
Seabreacher X. Yes. Up on geekspeak.org pretty soon. Miles, energy exploding from lakes. You got dry water, you got exploding water. What the heck?
There is a lake in Rwanda, Lake Kivu, which is known as being one of the worst places to live, actually, because it will expel carbon dioxide and...
In volume.
Yeah, in large volumes, and has been known to kill people because it will spread out, carbon dioxide being heavier than the mixture of air that we have normally. Right. It'll just pool in different areas, and if you live in a valley next to it, then
and it kind of erupts every once in a while.
It does erupt from time to time.
And then it erupts, and then it would... I mean,
it's got thousands of years worth of dissolved volcanic gases trapped, usually near the bottom, and they'll bubble up over time. So what the Rwandan government is planning on doing is basically sending a pipe down and trying to get some of this... not necessarily the carbon dioxide, but the methane. There's a whole lot of methane down there. Pump it up and use that as an energy source. So, you know,
and I would assume the side effect would be to lessen the potential of it expelling a whole bunch of gases.
Right. It's also diffusing that bomb, but making it practical.
Very cool. That's in Rwanda?
That is in Rwanda.
Awesome. We have time for one more story. Commodore is back?
Yes, Commodore.
Excellent.
So Commodore USA announces the PC-64. It's an Atom-powered PC in a replica Commodore case.
Cool.
So, all sorts of geek happiness happening there.
The Commodore 64 is normally noted for geeks that as their first computer.
Exactly. Yeah. So them and Commodore licensing came to an agreement finally. I guess there's been all sorts of stuff in the works for a few years that never came to fruition. So this is the first time it's actually worked out. So everything's now going to have an actual Commodore decal on it. And this paves the way for other new offerings. This particular one is an Intel Atom-powered PC with 4 gigs of DDR3 memory, SATA 1 terabyte hard drive, HDMI output, optical drive, you know, and all the bells and whistles.
So a regular computer.
Yeah, I hope it's quiet so you can use it as your media center computer. That's where you'd want it in front of your TV.
I wonder if I can get a TI-99.
Ooh.
Eventually.
But can you imagine typing on that thing with those big keys?
Giant
clack,
keys.
Clack, clack, clack.
Hopefully they'll have USB ports you can plug into the keyboard or Bluetooth too. All right, thanks to the Commodore Victor. And since we're talking about old trademarks, Al, you want to talk about a trademark?
Oh, yeah. Guess who's trying to trademark the word face?
Friendster?
MySpace?
No, well, LinkedIn. I didn't think it was going to be that hard. Yeah, not only the word face, but the word book.
they're trying to trademark them?
And they're going after companies that have used the word face in their name and saying, "Hey, we, you know, we're Facebook and we own the word face now."
That is just stupid.
Yep, and they're going about it and trying to do it. It's just, you know, similar to what McDonald's did to everybody who used the word or the word
prefix.
Mac,
the prefix Mac.
You can't do that. We're McDonald's and you can't have, you know, McDarmas or whatever you want to call it. You can't have it. So we're going to sue you and we're big and we'll win.
Okay, we're running out of time. Yep. I want to ask, didn't somebody have a Facebook lawsuit story?
Yeah, there was a couple teenagers recently are suing Facebook because there's a thing that if you say you like something, it'll tell all your friends and says, "Hey, Susie likes, you know, this." Sure. Well, it puts your picture in there, and a lot of people are, you know, these people suing are teenagers, and their images are being used to basically be in an ad, and they don't have permission to use these minors' faces in these ads, and their parents haven't signed off on it.
Right.
And so they're suing Facebook saying, "You can't put my picture next to this thing that you say I like and broadcast it to my friends."
Of course,
friends.
Facebook's going to go, "But yeah, your picture is a picture of a face, and we own that trademark."
Yeah. Yeah. Since we own the word face, we own your face.
Geek Speak on KSP is supported by Home and Small Business Tech, providing IT support for businesses, tech support for home computers. Home and Business Tech specializes in protecting data and have been providing data storage, recovery, virtualization, and maintenance for over 10 years. HASBtech.com. Geek Speak on KOSP is also supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Central Coast Public Radio KOSP. We are streaming at kosp.org and, of course, podcasting as well. And, of course, geekspeak.org is all the information for today's show. The geeks today are Miles Elam, Lindsay Lonnie, and myself, Lyle Troxell, and, of course, Al Luckow.
Hi, this is Al Luckow with GeekSpeak's Crazy USB Device of the Week. The year is 1975. People everywhere are boogieing to the beat, doing the hustle beneath giant mirrored balls. It was at this time a man named Gary Dahl, sitting in the Los Gatos bar, had a moment of genius. He conceives of advertising's most brilliant invention, the Pet Rock. He markets it, and it quickly makes him a millionaire. The fad lasted about 6 months. Well, now, 35 years later, somebody has had that same stroke of genius. Make way for the USB Pet Rock. You plug it into your USB port, it draws no power, is compatible with every OS platform, includes an 18-inch USB cable. But most of all, it loves you forever, and will probably outlive you. It's real. The link's up on geekspeak.org.
Pet Rock USB device doesn't do anything else.
Nope.
Does the USB cable disconnect from the Pet Rock, so at least you get a cable?
No, it's 18 inches.
It's 18 inches? Yeah, but does it disconnect? Do you use it for something?
It's a Pet Rock with a USB cable connected to it.
Instead of a leash.
Don't try to do anything else with it.
GeekSpeak is a registered service mark online tonight with David Lawrence, and we thank the Puppet Master for his support of the show and the use of GeekSpeak.org, or GeekSpeak, excuse me. And next week, we're going to be at the Ice Creamery downtown. That's the Penny Ice Creamery. You can learn more information at GeekSpeak.org. We're going to give away t-shirts. You get some free ice cream. You get to meet all the geeks, take pictures, whatever. And that's next week after the show on GeekSpeak. Of course, we'll be here next week at 10 a.m. For KOSP and for GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Miles, Lindsay, Al, thank you for being on here today.